From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Brother Hari Shankar, Senior Manager, Medicare Division of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Hari completed his MBA program from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in the year 2002. And prior to that, he had done his BTech from the prestigious Indian Institute of Technology, Chennai. In this thought-provoking talk, he practically analyzes what is reality. Stay tuned, dear listeners, interspersed and after the talk, we have some soulful songs sung by the overseas devotees. After which, at 3:30 p.m., we will have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And for now, over to Brother Hari Shankar.
When I go back to my initial years as a student of MBA at Bhagwan's College, that's really our first introduction to a Lord whom we have seen from a distance. And suddenly, as a student, you're there up close, and every day Bhagwan was very gracious in those days to spend so much time with each one of us. I can count that nearly 40 minutes every afternoon he would stand amongst us, speaking to us, joking with us, sometimes admonishing us. But we could see him so much up close, you know, that Lord whom we had adored from a distance. And it really is an education. Because so many things that we read about Bhagwan, like even when we learn about God, we say that God is omniscient, He is omnipresent, He is omnipotent. But the real impact of seeing that up close for yourself, and not only that, seeing Bhagwan do it so routinely and in such a casual manner, you realize that for God, these are part of His own nature. They are not anything extraordinary that He has to gloat about. They are part of His nature. On a daily basis, you would watch Bhagwan, you know, materialize a ring or a chain or vibhuti for somebody. And while you kept wondering, oh, where did that come from? For Bhagwan, it was a nonchalant. Any day He would do that, any time He would do that. You see, once what happened was, there was this one friend of mine who we used to share the same room. So he suffered from fever for a week, so he could not attend darshan. And he used to be a great favorite of Bhagwan. Bhagwan used to like him a lot. Almost every day during darshan, he would exchange a few words with him. He was this very thin, skinny guy, very tall, and he was from New Delhi. And Bhagwan, for whatever reason, he had a nickname for him. He used to call him Delhi Bull. Very skinny guy, but Swami used to call him Delhi Bull. So the Delhi Bull was missing from darshan for a week. And finally, when he recovered from fever, he told me that, I think I would have lost some weight. I just want to go and check how much weight I have lost. So we went, the two of us, we went to the dispensary. And it was the weighing scale was on one corner of the dispensary, totally away from anybody else. So it was just the two of us who saw what was his weight. So it was 68 kgs. So next day he goes for darshan and Swami sees him and Swami's face lights up. He said, oh, Delhi Bull, you have come. And where have you been? So he went up to Swami. He said, Swami, I had fever. And I was sitting little close by, so I could hear their conversation. And then Swami calls the warden. He says, see, this boy, he has lost weight. That is because he is from Delhi. He is accustomed to eating chapatis. And here in the hostel, every day you are giving him rice, 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 rice. Naturally, he will fall sick. So Swami said, from now on, you should give chapatis. See, poor boy, he has lost weight. And Swami asked him, so what is your weight now? So he has seen his poor warden already getting thrashed by Bhagwan for really no fault of his. So he decided that he'll protect the warden. He told Swami it is 70 kgs. Immediately Swami turned to him. He said, hey, jhoot bolta hai. You're telling lies. It is 68. And my mouth fell open. Really, because other than the Delhi Bull, his name is Amit. Other than Amit and I, there was no one else on the physical plane who knew what his weight was. Bhagwan, immediately, his reaction was so quick, so spontaneous, he just turns like that and he says, hey, jhoot bolta hai, 68. So, you know, I was myself a recipient of, or a witness to such a power after a short while. See, when I joined as a student, I had one agenda which was uppermost in my mind. That was my mother, she used to suffer from arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis. So, it was my prayer to Bhagwan that Bhagwan should cure my mother because I couldn't see her in so much pain. So, I tried, you know, I wrote letters to Bhagwan, I tried to give it to him for almost 2 weeks. The same letter I used to carry and try and show it to Bhagwan. He would always, you know, brush it off or he would never take it. And I started wondering what on earth is happening, why is Bhagwan so unconcerned about my mother's health. Then a series of events transpired and one day I found myself right in front of the interview room. So Bhagwan had called me there for something. And while we were talking, I thought finally this is my chance. So I told Swami in Kannada, so that people around me don't understand. I said, Swami, mother's health is not good. He said, yes, I know. And he said, see, first the doctors, they said it is rheumatism. And then they said it is arthritis, isn't it? So I said, yes, Swami. And my mind actually at that moment flashed back to all those times when I used to study in Chennai, but I used to come home for the vacations. And the first thing I would do is, I would go to my mother and hold her wrist over here and press it a little bit. So sometimes the pain would be so much that when I just pressed a little, she would say, ah, you know, and some other times I could press it a little more and I'd get hope that, oh, she's better. So, Bhagwan, here he is, he's saying, yes, I know, first the doctor said it is rheumatism, then it is arthritis. This is the exact sequence of events, by the way. That's how our diagnosis went. And suddenly Swami lifts his arm and he holds over here, he says, it pains, no, over here. And I was so aghast. Imagine the first question that not only came to my mind, but also flew out of my mouth was, how do you know? Imagine, like you've read all the Satyam Shivam Sundarams, all the different biographies of Bhagwan. You know he is God, you know he has all these powers, he knows everything. And yet the foolish mind at that moment, all it can think of is, how do you know? So Bhagwan was so, you know, pleased. I was holding up my hand like this, like I was praying to Bhagwan. And he, like, you know, like how teenagers interact, he said, I know, and then, you know, he hit it like a high five. So that was, you know, these are very casual but clear indications that Bhagwan, even when we think that he is physically not with us, not around us, at every moment he is with us. He is, you know, watching over us, watching from inside us, right? There is nothing that escapes his attention. Everything is known to him. And this, apart from us being very awed and feeling full of love towards that gracious Lord, it begs one very simple question. Really the question is, how does he know? How on earth does Bhagwan know what is going on with us? Because look at me, like at this moment, I'm looking at you. I have no clue what is going on in your mind. I don't know your name. I don't know where you come from. I don't know what your feelings are, what your thoughts are at this moment. I have no clue. In fact, I believe that I, Harishankar, am this entity that is encased in this body. It's large, accommodating, but I am encased in this body. And I have this mind. I feel that my thoughts, my feelings are all here, in here. And I feel that I am located somewhere here. Because if I ask myself or if I ask you, so who are you or where are you? Your very first thing is to point like, I am here. In our cultures, I am here. So this is something we have been deeply invested in, the feeling that there is something, there is that the person whom I call myself is something that is located somewhere within this body, and that I have a mind, that this entity is here, this is where it is located. And where are you located? Within your own body, that's where you are. So there is this separation, right? Here I am, here you are. So there is simply no way that I can identify with myself, with yourself, and for me to know what is going on within you. But here comes somebody like Bhagwan, who comes and smashes all those thoughts to smithereens. Because for him, he would very clearly say, there is no distinction between you and I. You and I are one. And he would turn us to the scriptures, they're also saying pretty much the same thing. The Upanishads have always maintained. Not only they would say that two people are one, they in fact had this very, there's a beautiful verse in the Anandavalli, which says that, okay, take here this very tiny little man, and then take that brilliant shining sun up in the sky, so huge, so large, so powerful. And the Upanishads go on to declare that actually these two are one. There's simply no difference between these two. So with all of this, we are challenged with this notion, no? Like if we take ourselves to be this person that is encased within the body and other people are encased in their own bodies, then it starts to challenge this notion of who we are. And notice that is how we live our lives, isn't it? We actually are leading our lives with that fixed notion that here I am and here is the entire world around me, with the people all around me. Because we compete with each other over small, small things. We are unable, like if we stand in a queue, that concern is always there, right? Will I get what is on offer? If you are standing for queue in a bus, we are worried that the other person might be able to sit, but not I. In an office atmosphere, we are worried the other person may get a promotion and I may get left out. Or he or she may get an increment and I may get left out. So we are always competing against each other. For what are we competing, we don't know, but we are always competing. Then we safeguard ourselves against each other. Truly speaking, if you were to actually examine your life, even take those people whom you consider as very close to you, your children, your spouse, your parents, whoever it is, notice in all your interactions with them, at the very base, at the very basis of it is actually fear. You fear the people around you. You fear your parents. You fear your spouse. You're actually afraid of your own friends. Because you're always taking some action to protect yourself against them. Like, if I say this, they may react this way and then I'll get injured. Or I do this to them and they may, you know, react in so and so way. Because if we had to tell the truth about our interactions with people, that's exactly how it proceeds. Whether we like to admit it or not, we fear the people around us. We manipulate them so that we can cover up for our fear of them. Notice that this is driving our life. It is very, very important to understand that the way we humans interact and the way a divine master interacts is totally different. Notice how closed our own circle is, right? If I say that what do I call I and what do I call mine, it's a very, very small circle. I am at the center of this circle and there's a small little radius in which I put in my family. I say they are my family, like my father, my mother, my children. Perhaps some of us might make it a little larger and say, yes, my community, my religion, my nation. But yet at the center of it is who we are. And there's a circle around which we have defined, saying like, this is mine. For most of us, that circle, truly speaking, would stop at our immediate family. But look at Bhagwan. You know, I can count the innumerable number of, people whom I have seen, whom Swami has showered so much love, it is so difficult to, keep count. Students, the number of devotees from abroad, from within India. Every single day, Swami would come, He would take their letters, grant darshan, grant interviews. And to some of the students, I am telling you, He used to literally give Himself totally away to them. Believe me, I have witnessed it with my own eyes. The amount of love that He had, it was something to witness. I can never forget that, once in Trai Brindavan, Swami, just before darshan, He came out of the Trai Brindavan and onto the lawns, and we were all standing there a little distance away. And Swami was holding something in His hand, and we were all wondering what it is. So then He calls the warden of the Brindavan campus, He called him, and He's talking very animatedly to him, and suddenly there's a lot of commotion. People are running around here, there. And it turned out that Swami was looking for one particular student. And when that student comes rushing to Swami, what Swami had in His hand was one photograph which a teacher had taken of Swami speaking to this student. You should have seen the excitement in Swami's face. Look, there is this photo, see the two of us. And that boy is like so astounded, like, okay, we have a photo. But Swami is so excited. Seeing that, see this photo. And then like He's showing the other people around with that much excitement. See, this is the photo we have. And then He calls that student and gives it to him. At that moment, I could sense that phenomenal amount of love that Swami has towards the student who is not His relative. Swami has absolutely no guarantee that after the student finishes his studies that he'll stick on over there. Swami has never asked that, I have given you so much love, now I want you to stay with me. He's always set us free. Can you imagine that kind of love that you can give to somebody, not knowing that that person may stay with you, may be yours ever? So that was the kind of love that Swami could give to a complete stranger, actually a complete stranger, some small student in His class, in His college. That was the kind of love that He would let flow to anybody I have seen. And if you contrast that with us, we have so many conditions. If we want to give our love to somebody, that so and so has to be this way. And when I am like in this kind of mood, that other person has to behave in so and so way so that I am not triggered. We've got a small little manual called How to Behave When I Am Around. Because we are so invested that this is who I am. The small little quirks, my personality, my feelings, my thoughts, my emotions. We are so invested saying that this is who I am. So the question comes then, really, who am I? If all this, there is something beyond, like what the saints, what Swami has shown us, what the Upanishads have shown us, that means somehow our understanding of who we have taken ourselves to be, there is something to be added to that. It is not wrong, but there is something that we have been missing. Exactly what is that? And this has been an inquiry that has been ages, centuries, millennia old. Even when you study the Old Testament, there we see that Moses, in his wanderings in the desert, one day he sees this very strange blue light in a few bushes that attracts him. So he goes and stands towards that bush and asks this light, "Who are you?" And that light gives a very enigmatic answer. It says, I am that I am. Nothing more. It says, I am, and just when you're about to think it's going to say, I am so and so, the light says, I am that I am. That's all. And like Moses, so many of us, when we read that answer, we've been completely stupefied, not understanding what on earth it meant. I was recently, in fact this weekend, I had gone to Tiruvannamalai, the ashram of Raman Maharishi. There, it is something I had been reading about Raman Maharishi, I've been reading his conversations from many years. It was a dream of mine to actually visit that ashram. And I went to the temples over there, and somehow this I felt there's something missing. It's still, I'm not feeling his presence. Till I entered his meditation hall. See, this was a hall where Raman Maharishi would actually, he would lie down on a couch over there. He would give darshan. And many people who sat in his presence in those times, he would sit very silently, maybe for 2-3 hours. And they had this experience that whatever peace that Raman Maharishi was experiencing within himself, that he was able to transmit to everybody who was present over there. There is this very beautiful book called A Search in Secret India. It is written by Paul Brunton. So Paul Brunton, he was somehow attracted to India because something told him that a spiritual awakening is waiting for him over there, that there is some guru who is waiting for him there. So he goes all over India searching for that guru. He goes to the north, to the Himalayas, where he sees yogis do some very astounding feats. He sees all that, he is amazed by it, but somehow that connection, he does not feel it. So in all his wanderings across India, he somehow lands up in this small remote village called Tiruvannamalai in the south of India. He goes there and he sits in this meditation hall. It's a very small hall, I would say about the size of this podium. So he's sitting there and the Maharishi is sitting on the couch. And in walks a person who that very morning, this person has lost his child, young child. You can imagine that that is the, like the greatest grief that a parent can ever endure, that a person can ever endure, the loss of one's old child. And fresh from that wound, he's come there and he wants to seek solace from Raman Maharishi, to somehow abate that pain, that extreme anguish in his heart. And Paul Brunton is totally new to this place. He understands what is going on through some interpreter. And his expectation is that Raman Maharishi would actually go over to that person, talk to him, maybe, you know, say a few consoling words. The Maharishi does nothing of that sort. He just sits there on that couch of his, not even looking at this person. The entire time, his eyes are on the hill that is just behind, the sacred Arunachala hill, and his eyes are looking out of the window, just transfixed at that hill. And that is when Paul Brunton realizes that something is transpiring inside his own mind. He sees that how his own thoughts that were racing, that were thinking, what would the Maharishi do? Oh, he has so much grief. All these thoughts, very, 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 very slowly, they are slowing down. They are coming to a still. And he notices that everybody there is so very, very tranquil, very calm, including this person who has gone through so much grief, so much anguish. That person, after 3 hours, he's so silent. His eyes close. He sits there in meditation in the presence of the Maharishi. After 3 hours, he gets up, he touches the feet of Maharishi, Maharishi smiles, and then he goes away. That is the effect of the presence of a saint. And it was to this very place that I had gone. And in my mind, of course, I had this thought that yes, in this meditation hall, such incidents have happened. Believe me, the experience is very real. The Ravan Maharishi passed away in 1950, April 14, 1950. And 2018, I go and sit in that hall and I experience the same tranquility. And I thought it is a coincidence. I went out of the room, came back three more times to see whether, you know, my mind was conjuring up things. It is not. That effect was so real. The effect of a master who's passed away almost 68 years ago, you sit in that presence, you feel that he is there. And this was a person whose sole inquiry throughout, if you asked him like, what is the sadhana that I should do, he would say there is only one thing that you need to keep doing. He would say that you need to keep inquiring, who are you? Who am I? Who am I? Nanyar, who am I? You have to keep inquiring. That was his only prescription. You just sit someplace very silently and notice that all the things that you have taken yourself to be, no? I said like your personality, your profession, so many things that you called yourself to be. He would say sit and collect your thoughts about who you are and then hold them up for inquiry called, is this who I am? And when you set that all aside, then who are you? Because the first answer, very quick and easy answer, is that we are this body. And there's this very philosophical question, it's called the ship of Theseus. The Greeks would ask this question, that there was this ship, it was called the ship of Theseus, right? So they said, okay, so here it is come made of these planks of wood. And every year what would happen is the one plank of the wood would rot away and then it would be replaced by a new plank. And they would continue this process over several years. So over four decades, what had happened was every plank of this ship had been completely replaced. And then the Greek philosophers asked that when you have completely replaced this plank and you still call it the ship of Theseus, then what is the ship of Theseus? See, Bhagavan would ask the same question. He says, now look at this small child. That small child says, I am this. Then the child grows up to 18 years old. The body looks completely different. And still the child says, this is who I am. And then, you know, we grow up, we become middle-aged. Again the body has changed. The hair has grown white. Some joints are beginning to creak. And then we say, yes, this is who I am. Age 70, the body is bent over. Everything about the body has changed. Every small thing, even the skin cells aren't the same every 120 days. So what is it that we have called us in that case? And here's one small little weird little thing that I'll tell you about. Now you think that you are the inhabitor of this body. Now actually when you look deep into it, just if you take a microscope on your skin and you'll notice there are millions and millions of bacteria. Not only that, there are so many in your own gut, in your intestines, there live colonies of bacteria which actually are digesting your food for you. The food goes in, they help in the digestion, they feed off that food and some of it goes into your body and you also feel, you know, that energized by that food. Now then, exactly who is inhabiting this body? Then you realize that you are sharing this room with so many people. There are so many small, small little such beings that exist even within this body and you are one among them. And yet you claim this is my body. That is akin to you staying in the dormitory here and then telling the ashram officials, this is my room. There's so many things, like the body itself changes and then within your body there are so many entities that are staying and all of them claiming that this is my body, this is mine. You are just one among them.
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned. Satya Dharma.
Ananda, Prema, Shanti, Ananda.
Love is my form, truth is my breath, bliss is my food.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are now continuing with the talk by Hari Shankar. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanti Nilayam on the 17th of December 2017. Stay tuned.
Then there is this illusion that we have a mind. I'm not contesting that we don't get thoughts, that none of that. The illusion is that we have the mind, whereas I think in reality it is the mind that has us. Because if we had the mind, if we owned our own minds, then my challenge to each one of you would be, stop thinking now. Stop your thoughts now. No, right now. You can't, nor can I. It just goes on and on. Even if I say, now stop the thoughts. See, Baba used to say, he used to make fun of our practice of meditation. There's this interaction between a member of the Hyderabad youth who came to Swami and said, Swami, what practice do you recommend? So Swami would say, do seva. He would say, no, teach me some practice of meditation. Then Swami would smile and say, see, that is something that is beyond you. Even in discourses, Swami would say, you all sit. And then, you know, our thought is that we should somehow still the mind. Notice, the moment you have that thought, what happens? The thoughts grow all the more. Like one thought spawns another. It's like how I surf the websites, no? Like I open one website, I'm reading something, then I notice, oh, there is a link to something else. So open that also. And then I read that, I realize there's some, before I know it, 2 hours are gone. What started as, let me search one small term, 2 hours later, I'm like, where did that time go? So that's exactly what we say, you know, when we say we have our mind, we have thoughts. The inquiry is whether the thoughts have us, whether our minds have us, or whether we have a mind. Because it's absolutely beyond us. There is the way the thoughts get generated. We are only experiencing those thoughts, to speak the truth. We experience those thoughts. How many of you have control over how you feel? Supposing I shout at you now. How many of you have control over that? In a trice, the opinions have formed. What is this guy doing? This is an ashram. Can he speak like this? Can he shout like this? Within seconds, how much time does it take for those thoughts to form? And then we say that, no, we are the person that thinks, I have a mind, I'm able to apply my mind. That is another illusion we have, that we can apply our minds. So, that is the question that was challenged by Bhagwan. In fact, by the Upanishads. Bhagwan would very, 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 very clearly, he would tell us, he would say, you are neither your body, nor are you your mind. Then in that case, who on earth are we? What is it that we are? There is something that we are. What is it that we are? And for that, I would suggest that we need to ask also an allied question called, where am I? Where am I located? Because I think that is also a part of the illusion that we have about ourselves. Called, I am located here, somewhere here. See, notice for example that you are having a phone conversation with somebody or watch somebody who is having a phone conversation over their cell phone with somebody who is at a distant location, and the person is very engrossed in that conversation. Notice you can, that person, though his eyes may be on you, they're not on you. They're not seeing even what is in front of them. It takes a lot to gain their attention. Some of them, their eyes are closed. There's a light smile playing on their lips, or there's a frown. So if I ask at this moment, where is that person? Where is that person? Where are you when you are on a phone call with somebody else? Where are you at that moment? Experientially. You can see that with anyone. No, if I had to ask a question, where is that person? His eyes are seeing, but not seeing. He may hear us. He may hear the numerous sounds all going around him. But he is not there. He is not hearing those sounds. He is not present to it at all. Then where is that person? If the truth be told, if that person is speaking to somebody in the United States of America, that person is there with the person whom he is speaking to. He is thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away from here. He is not located where his body is. He is located there in the United States of America. I recall, you know, one funny interaction that I had with Bhagwan. Bhagwan's constant way of teasing me was to make me get married. So what he would do was, he was the person who would hint to know that you should not get married. And then after that keep teasing me, no, you get married, you know. So constant torture it used to be. So one day he did this, Bhajan Hall, we had gone to show him some card. And there he started saying, he said, no, you should get married. I said, no, Swami. Then Swami looked very angrily. He said, hey, in this universe, even a small blade of grass is important. You should not say no to everything. So I was like confused, what is Swami saying? So I knew that usually he's up to some tricks like this, so I just kept quiet. So then he turned to somebody else who was playing tabla. And Swami asked him, so, oh, you have come, where is your son? So he told Swami, Swami, my son is sitting out there in that part of the darshan hall, you know, where when you turn like this for darshan, he is sitting over there. Then Swami, very sly smile on his face, he says, see, here you are sitting here in front of me, bodily. But where is your mind? Your mind is with your son, where he is sitting out there in the, outside the bhajan hall, in the Kulwant hall. And without turning towards me, he says, this is what happens after marriage. The Swami was very, very clever. Huh? So that is what Swami sees, ki, where you are located is not where you think you are. Now most of us, where do we think we are located? We are located within our own body. But when you actually see experientially with you, what is happening is, there are times where you experience yourself as being with another person. Especially when you are looking at someone else, say your mind is totally transfixed on that person. If you actually inquire at that moment where you are, where do you experience seeing that person? You experience seeing that person at the place where that person is. It's a very difficult process. It's almost like a meditation. But when you do that inquiry time and time and time and time again, it begins to shatter that notion that who you are is a person that is located within this body. I had this very strange experience several years ago when I was first, through Bhagavan's discourses, I started getting acquainted with the idea of Advaita. For me, it was a very strange notion to say that, you know, the same I is located in everybody. So I would start imagining that, okay, I am walking and there's a person walking across, you know, my path. So am I in that person? Am I that person? Am I crossing myself? So these were some strange conundrum that I had. And I kept, you know, for whatever reason in my room, somebody had collected lot of Bhagavan's discourses all on Advaita only. All that Swami had said about Advaita, they were all different discourses that person had collected. And I was leafing through all of them also, trying to understand what is it that Swami meant when he says that it is the same I that is present in everybody. At that time, I also started reading Raman Maharishi's books, because this was the same thing that he also used to repeat, that you are not an individual that you take yourself to be. You are more than that. So I started thinking, really, for a long time my mind was really anguished by this thought that I do not understand this at all. That something Swami is saying, he is able to experience that he is one with everybody, and here I am not able to. What should I do? So I remember one night I was reading Raman Maharishi's book about all this. I got very frustrated. I closed the book and I thought, somehow these are not working for me. This is not for me. And I go to sleep. So next morning I have this dream that here I am and, you know, all my friends, I can see my friends, and we are all having a debate. We are having an argument with each other. Some of us loud voices, some of us are making fun of whatever topic we are discussing. The usual, you know, how we discuss things with our friends. So I was having that kind of debate was going on with all our friends, right? And this was a dream. I don't know how many of you have experienced this, but as you are waking up, you know, you just realize that you are having a dream and you just start to wake up because you realized that you are watching a dream and this is not reality. So somehow I was at that, you know, point in time where I realized I am watching a dream, and because of that I was starting to wake up. And as I woke up, I suddenly realized that the voices that are animating all those voices that were speaking in my dream were actually my own voice. I suddenly realized that the voices that I was hearing from all those friends in my dream were nobody else's but my own voice. And at that moment I heard like a broadcast which said that this is exactly how you are present in everybody. For about 2 days it really shook me that what was that? Because I realized that after this, can I even speak to someone else? Is there a different entity? Is there, when I look at somebody, is that somebody different from me? Because when that person acts, when that person talks, who is making that person talk? It took me almost 2 days to actually come back to my senses, because that voice was very clear. It's the whole experience that whenever you watch something happening around you, whenever you watch somebody say something, talk something, right? You are, that person is being animated by none other than you. Then where are you located? There's this very beautiful experience that Brother Satyajit had with Swami. So Brother Satyajit was, he had the fortune of attending to Swami physically for more than a decade. He was very close to Swami. Swami loved him a lot. And one such day, you know, he used to stay with Swami, you know, in his own residence. And Swami once asked him, so what is it that you want? What do you want to see? So then Brother Satyajit, he knew that he is in the presence of the Lord himself. And of course, he, the most precious thing that he could have asked for, he asked. He said, Swami, I want to see your Vishwarupa Darshan. He straight up asked. Because this was something that we read in the Gita, that in the middle of the battle, when Arjuna is surrounded by all his foes and also his own army behind, at that moment when his whole, when his courage left him, when his spirits failed him, that is when Lord Krishna gives him the teaching of the Gita, and during that, the Lord shows him the Vishwarupa Darshan as himself being present in the entire universe. So we all have this notion that is built up, you know, that you will see that the Lord will expand in size, and inside that Lord you will see all the stars, the galaxies, the various planets. And this in our mind is a Vishwarupa Darshan. Perhaps Brother Satyajit also had the same notion. So he asked Swami, Swami, I want to see your Vishwarupa Darshan. Swami said, okay, I will grant it to you. And days passed, even Brother Satyajit had forgotten about this promise that Bhagwan had given him. One day, while Swami was at Trayi, Vrindavan, Swami says, turns to Satyajit, he said, you remember you asked me for Vishwarupa Darshan? So Satyajit was very excited. He said, yes, Swami. Come, let's go in the car. So they get into the car and Satyajit is driving. And as they're passing the main thoroughfares of Whitefield, and you know, as you can imagine, that everybody was excited that Bhagwan Baba is out there on the streets, is out there on the road. We can have such easy darshan. By the way, one strategy at that time used to be that where the speed breakers are located, the car will slow down. Right? And if you stand over there, the darshan time is extended by a few seconds. So many people would stand there at the speed breakers and maybe potholes also. So many people used to be gathered along the lines of the road, all waiting to see Bhagwan. Their faces would be literally crammed up against the windows of the car. So that was the closest darshan. Just imagine, there's only a small little glass separation between you and Bhagwan. So close you could see Swami. And sometimes Swami would smile or, you know, bless from across the car. So many thousands of people are lined up to have this close darshan. And Satyajit's mind is ticking away that when on earth am I going to get this Vishwarupa Darshan? At that moment, Swami says, you wanted Vishwarupa Darshan? Here it is. Just look out of the car. Here it is. And many of you here are very mature, but when I heard this incident directly from Satyajit's mouth, I was sitting next to him, I said, that's all? What do you mean? Like, I said, so what happened after that? Because, you know, he was trying to tell me that this was what Swami said, Vishwarupa Darshan, here it is. And I am waiting for the miraculous that Swami's form expanded and he saw a huge light. None of that. This is Vishwarupa Darshan. What do you mean by that? Because it takes a lot of inquiry before we really get what Swami is experiencing. Because as long as we are fixed in this thought that this is who I am and that is Bhagwan, this is how we'll experience Him also. Because for Bhagwan, there was nothing else in this universe. There is nothing else in this universe except Him. Because for Him, He did not exist in that small little, you know, 3 feet, sorry, 3.5, whatever measurement it was. That was not Him. That was one of the bodies He occupied. For Bhagwan, that entire expanse of the universe, not just the people, not just the living organisms, that entire expanse that could be seen and that cannot be seen, all of that was Him. In fact, He didn't experience that there was anything else apart from Him. Which is, it takes that kind of master to go out and say that, see, this in front of you is in fact my cosmic body. You are already having darshan of this cosmic body. The Vishwarupa darshan, right here, right now, is available to everybody. It is, need not be vouchsafed for Arjuna himself. You don't need Lord Krishna to come and give you that darshan. It is available to you right now, right here. Because all that is how we interact. See, that answers the question called, where am I? The Upanishads say that you are located in a circle which has as its center any point in this universe. You are there everywhere. There is absolutely no part of this universe where you do not exist. But the illusion that we have created for ourselves continually is that this is who we are, this body. Which is why when I said that, when that Hyderabad youth member, when he asked Bhagwan, Bhagwan, what is the sadhana that we should undertake? Swami very clearly told it that meditation may not be for us. Yes, these are very beautiful concepts called that I am present in everybody. That I am the one who energizes everybody. That I am present in the entire universe. At this moment, how many of us can actually comprehend that? None of us. Because that's what we tend to do in our meditation. So Bhagwan says that instead of that, Bhagwan prescribes for us the very, very easy path of service. Swami says actually get into service. For the Hyderabad youth, I was briefly a member of that. I have seen like how much work they do. They used to go into the villages month after month. They would set their jobs aside. Or even now at their center in Hyderabad, the mind-boggling amount of seva that they do. They are engaged in giving vocational service to people. They are doing village service. Because that momentum that Bhagwan had given long back, he just pointed out one simple path. He said, take up the path of service. And that is enough for all of you. Because it is only through service, that is when we realize that where are we actually located. We are located amongst the people. There was this, an article somebody had sent to me about a person who was seeking for advice as to how to become happy. Because there are so many things that in this world that can make us happy. Physical pleasures can make us happy. I had this Baskin Robbins ice cream the other day with strawberry topping. Beautiful. Unbelievable. Made me very happy. That was 2 days ago. What about today? Today what is going to make me happy? And because our definition of happiness actually corresponds to a certain chemical going off in our head called dopamine. And I can make the dopamine happen, trigger happen, even without any input. Like I need not have food go into my mouth. Somebody needs to just trigger that with an electrical signal. I'm happy. What does it take? They said that the true happiness you realize is when you stop being concerned about your own happiness. Not that you shouldn't be, but I'm saying at that moment when you can set just your own happiness as your concern, but also take in other people's happiness as your concern. Paradoxically, at that moment, you are happiest. That is the strangest thing that occurs. See, most of our lives, what do? We have a certain idea called, if I keep pursuing this, I will be happy. Most of us chase happiness that way. Let me buy a car. No, not this car. Then the bigger car. Or a better looking car. Or a better looking spouse. or a better job with better pay. That's what makes us happy, is what? We keep chasing that. Well, Bhagwan all the time is laughing at us. He says, all you need to do is, you know, for some time, just kinchit, this much time at least, set your own concerns aside and take on the concerns of people around you. Try to make them happy or try to remove their, you know, unhappiness. Parents know that, no? As a parent, you know exactly what we are talking about. As a parent, you know that the greatest happiness you get is from what? Seeing your child happy. And imagine that if you were to adopt an entire community as your own, make them all your children, just imagine the amount of happiness you will get. Because only then we'll get the answer as to where are we located. It's not in here. Because if it were in here, then making this thing within us happy would have us always contented. We are not. We achieve a greater happiness. We realize that we achieve a greater happiness when we realize that the center is not located here. It is located out there in the universe, where the Vishwa is, where the cosmos is. When we realize that our physical body is not our true body. The Upanishads call this tiny human being. It refers to us as the Virat. Virat means what? The cosmic body. The Upanishads very clearly assert, the Mandukya Upanishad if you read, very clearly it says that you are not this body you take yourself to be. Your body is this entire universe itself, the cosmic body. No, absolutely no doubt. Very clearly it asserts. And this is, you know, for us, Bhagwan's devotees, I don't think that we can give any greater joy to Bhagwan than to be in that enquiry. And for Bhagwan, for us being in that enquiry is what? Of course, in our personal level, we can keep asking ourselves that question, that who am I, where am I located? As Bhagwan wanted us always to inquire, remain in that self-enquiry. But really the fruits of that enquiry, if we were to follow Bhagwan's words, that Manav Seva is Madhav Seva, that be out there serving people. Now, what does it mean to serve people? Now, immediately one question comes that, oh, serving people means I have to have this, you know, Seva Dal ka badge, volunteer ka scarf, all that is required. And as long as that scarf is there on me, that is when I am on Seva mode. I will switch on the Seva mode when that scarf is on me. Then it's not there, then others can serve me. But actually, you are of service always. You are a Sevadal always. I recall, I'm very thankful to my mother for this kind of training that she gave me. You know, long back, we were kids then, my brother and I were traveling to Bombay, I remember, by train. There was this lady in our compartment, and my mother and she had developed a friendship, but she had lot of luggage. And when her station came, just a few stations before Bombay, then she was struggling. When she got up, she was struggling to take her luggage. And my mother just uttered two words. She said, Sevadal, she said. That's all. That moment, the two of us, we sprang up. We immediately took her luggage bags and we went and took it out on the platform and we were back. Because that's how she had trained us. Sevadal, just that's it. That moment, go and do the service that is required. You don't need a badge for that. I recall when I was studying in the IIT Chennai, that campus is a huge campus. From the gate up to the hostel, it's almost 2 kilometers. And I used to go by cycle. And there used to be several other, you know, communities that were living inside IIT also, or beyond the campus. So sometimes you would find at the entrance that there were people who were waiting for some lift. It could be children of a school who needed a lift to go home, right? So at one point of time, suddenly I realized that this is my opportunity to do some seva for these people. And I would hope that there are people out there waiting for a lift at times, you know. And I'm not ashamed to admit that when these people used to sit on my small little cycle, I used to imagine that I am Swami's driver. I have not told this to Swami's driver, who is still there. I interact with him on a daily basis. But I used to imagine that I am Mr. Padmanabhan, that I am Swami's driver, and naturally the person who I am taking along is Swami himself. You know, because due to those experiences, one realizes that this opportunity to do seva is there all the time around us. It may not even be physical. See, we do not realize if we actually sit and interact with people, the amount of mental anguish and pain that they are going through. You may not even be a psychologist. I tell some people that if you are going through something like that, I am a space of complete listening. I am a space of non-judgment. I won't judge you at all, but I need you to just tell me what you are going through. Just talk to me. And most of all, I assure them that I will not even give you one bit of advice. I am very clear. The last thing I will do is to give advice. I will just listen to you. You empty yourself, because I know that you can take care of yourself. You are strong enough. So most people just, you just need to be a space of listening for them. Just sit there and listen. What are you going through? Have you inquired with your own parents, with the people around you? What are you going through? We are never, 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 never present. I'm telling you, we are so much inside our own heads that we have no clue what people around us are going through. They may look happy, they're smiling all the time, but they wish that they had somebody that they could speak to, that would listen to them without judgment. How much relief that would give to people, can you imagine that? That itself is seva. You need not be physically, you need not have to do anything. Just be there for people. And you cannot be there for people unless you actually love people. And you cannot, and in order to love, really love a person, you cannot locate yourself here. You have to locate yourself out among them. And this is the true realization. This is the true practice of Bhagwan's teachings, because this was who he was. He never considered himself to be that person inhabiting one small little body. We have to be that. There is no other gift that we can give Bhagwan. In this week, this is the week when so many, many, many devotees will be gathering here for the Guru Purnima, the most auspicious time when we can really look up to the Guru for his grace, for him to share what he is experiencing, for that enlightenment. Because we know that they are having some magic, some secret. When I look at Ravan Maharishi's life, what did he wear? Was he wearing Van Huysen or, you know, some extraordinary suits like that? Nothing. The hill that he used to climb, did he have a helicopter to climb that? Nothing. He used to walk on foot even when he had arthritis. But such bliss on his face. You look at Bhagwan. No matter what it is, always on his face during darshan, a blissful smile. Where on earth do you get that? What is the secret of that? This is what we must ask our gurus. We must be very selfish. And on that day, let us pray to the Lord that he share some of that magic with us. Not the miracles, but the actual magic of his peace, of his equanimity, and of his love. With that prayer, I would like to conclude this session. Just a small little thing I wanted to share. I was walking into the hall, and this little girl over here, she, you know, her parents were standing there, and she says, of all the people, she says, let us go for this satsang hall talk. You know, for me it was very extraordinary that one little child like that can get attracted by something which even adults may call boring. Because I don't want to compare anybody, but what happened was, I am rounding that corner and one lady, she was running and she overtook me. And I was thinking, oh, she's going to the satsang hall. She wants to be there on time. She wants to be there before the speaker. And that last moment, she took a turn towards the shopping complex. And as I come here, there's a little girl, and in her small little voice, she says, let us go to the satsang hall. There must be something special that Bhagwan does to people like that, to have that kind of thought transplanted in them. And that is why I know that being here, being amongst you, it is a privilege. I don't take it for granted. I know that Bhagwan, out of his grace, has given me this opportunity to be amongst you. I don't at all take it for granted. I thank each one of you for your patient listening and for the opportunity that you have all provided me. Jai Sai Ram.
We are fearless. It is our right. Thank you. the love within my soul. Let your hand overlay my hand. Let my words and thoughts be guided by your love. Be the heart within my heart, the love within my soul. Let your hand overlay my hand. Let my words and thoughts be guided by your love. Be the heart within my heart, the love within my soul. Let your hand overlay my hand. Let my words and thoughts be guided by your love.
Your hand overlay.